and welcome to the Picture House podcast from Picture House Cinemas. I'm Sam Clements, and today I'm joined by
Karina Antrobus
and
Sarah Cook.
Karina and Sarah, thank you so much for joining us for our film chat. We're going to look at films that come out in the tail end of August. There's quite a busy release schedule at the end of summer, which is fantastic. Going into that bank holiday weekend, film distributors want their films in cinemas when people have free time.
One whole extra day of cinema viewing.
You can get them in. We're going to talk about four movies later in the show. But before then, we're going to go through the Picture House top five, as is tradition. Can anyone guess what might be in the top five for this mid-August week? We're recording now on the 15th of August.
I reckon Mission Impossible Fallout.
Mission Impossible
high.
Fallout is a good guess.
I would be surprised if Mamma Mia still isn't up there.
Interesting. Okay, well, let's go through it. In at number five, it's The Meg.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah?
I've not seen it yet, but I hear it's...
Hey, never judge a shark movie by its cover. Sarah, you have seen The Meg.
And I loved it. It's Jason Statham and a shark. What more do you want in life?
This is it. I don't know. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really excited. From sharks to ants, the latest Marvel film is in at number four, Ant-Man and the Wasp, which I have seen. I thought it was a very good sequel. I didn't think it would hit the heady highs of Avengers Infinity War, which came out earlier this year, or Black Panther, which was at the beginning of the year. But it's a good, nice, easy watch. Listeners to the podcast will know Sarah's voice from some interviews, because you've been interviewing several film directors for us this summer. How was Peyton Reed?
He is great. He has such great energy. And he loves all things ant. We had a nice little conversation about Adam Ant.
Maybe a hint at a future project, an Adam Ant biopic.
Yes.
Okay, you heard it here first. It's official. Now, Sarah, you mentioned Mission Impossible Fallout, and you were correct, because that is in at number three. After a mere, was it 2 or 3 weeks now, still hanging out, and it feels like this one has probably got the most critical praise of any Mission Impossible film.
It was a great city film, you know?
Yeah.
You saw London and Paris, and it's just beautiful like that, but no idea what happened.
Certainly, most people come out of the new Mission Impossible film, which is famous for Tom Cruise going through, you know, very challenging stunts and physical endurance tests, going like, how did he do that? How did they get a camera? But Karina came back out of Mission Impossible going, Paris looks nice.
Sounds like Karina needs a holiday.
Well, this is it. I'm going to Paris, and I thought that would be a very good way, rather than, like, get a Lonely Planet book, I would just watch Mission Impossible and be like, right, sold. Where's the Eiffel Tower? Let's go.
If your holiday to Paris is anything like Mission Impossible Fallout, I fear for you.
All my holidays are, Sam. One day you'll come along, you'll find out.
I really like this film. I'm so pleased it's got really good responses from audiences and critics. If this is the quality of Mission Impossible films to come, I can't wait for the next one. If Tom Cruise is still up for it at 56 or whatever he is now.
Tom. He will be. He'll be.
Isn't he 60s now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we're just making things up. He's 70.
I hope Mission Impossible 7's like, take a break. They go on holiday.
On a nice saga holiday.
Oh, a saga holiday. P.O. Cruises.
Yeah.
That's the cinematic universe crossover where it collides with the best exotic Marigold Hotel.
Exactly.
Well, we'll look forward to that one. I'm sure Tom will keep going. In at number two, it's Incredibles 2, which I loved. It's basically in my top 10, and the more I think about it, the closer it's getting to the top five, the coveted top five. It's superb. It's one of the best sequels I've ever seen. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I wasn't too overly... I liked it, but I wasn't very infused with it. Thought it followed a lot of the old film.
Okay.
And didn't find its new voice. But Jack and the Raccoon, I'm there. I'm sold for that sequence.
That's the standout scene, isn't it? The silent movie-type sequence where a baby with superpowers fights a raccoon who's stealing some rubbish.
Oh, see, if I'd known that in the first place, I would have seen it by now, maybe twice. Holly Hunter, for me, is a big draw. Anything that she does is okay with me, so...
And it really is her character, Elastigirl's film. She takes the sort of the lead position in this. I think it's a great sequel in that it fleshes out the family members who weren't really that fleshed out in the first film. It follows on directly after the first Incredibles, which was made like 12 years ago. It's quite unusual to be able to do that, but because it's animation, you don't have to worry about anyone aging.
Yeah.
So they would make a really nice double bill. Would recommend. And in at number one, it's Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. So you are correct, Karina.
Woo!
Mamma Mia is kind of the one to beat, really, going forward. And I don't know quite when we'll have a film that'll do it. Maybe one of the ones we'll discuss later in the show. But I have to say, I loved Mamma Mia. I thought it was superb. I hated the first one, loved the second one so hard. Like, I surprised myself. I had to spin it when I left the cinema. I looked in the mirror for a while and was like, did we just go through that? No, we did. We did. I think it was basically because Cher is in this film in quite a small role, but she comes at the end and she really elevates the whole thing.
Yeah. See, I would only go and see it for Cher. And again, sorry, I haven't seen it yet. It hasn't drawn me in yet, but I think it's one of those films that is going to keep on at the cinema for weeks on end. And my rule is to try and watch the indies first, because you never know how long they're actually going to be in the cinema. They might drop off, but I feel like Mamma Mia will still be knocking around at Christmas. Yes. So they'll be, you know, it's quite hot outside at the moment. So I'm just saving that one up for the winter bank.
Sarah, have you seen Mamma Mia? Here we go again.
I've seen it like 5 times.
Oh, wow. So
I also have like a problem with the fact that you hated the first one. You need to reevaluate your opinion on the first one after watching this one.
Maybe. I've seen the first one twice. I saw it first with my mum, who loved it, and I think I enjoyed it because my mum enjoyed it. And then the second time I saw it, in the cold light of day, no mum present, I realised that actually a lot of the film is out of focus. And like the singing is quite bad from some of the actors. And I didn't really enjoy the camp vibe. And the camp vibe is obviously very big in the second one as well. And I just got it. So something clicked for me. Yeah. I think it's the new director. It's the new script. Richard Curtis wrote the story for this with the director Ol Parker. Ol Parker is like probably the most talented director alive. The fact that he can direct all of these non-singers in this beautiful musical film.
But that's what auto-tune's for. Surely, it's doing its job.
I don't think anything's going to bring me much joy in my life as the Dancing Queen sequence.
No.
I think that is, if I'm blue, that is the one thing I'm going to go to and reach for. It's pure happiness.
I think for Mamma Mia cynics out there, this film really does hark back to the classical Hollywood musical in that thousands of dancers appear and they all know all the words and they all, like, it's very old school in that respect, but to ABBA music. And that is our top five. It is quite a summer blockbustery. It's probably the most summer blockbustery top five I think we've done in the history of the Bitch House podcast.
I mean, it makes sense though. It's summer.
It is summer and there are blockbusters. And yeah. You know what? All the ones I've seen I thought were really good. And The Meg is like number one on my to watch list. So, this week, we've got a whole bunch of films coming out. I say the end of August is usually quite busy because people want to get out on that bank holiday release date. Shall we start with the Disney film in the room? There seems to be a Disney film released almost every week these days. This week, Disney are releasing a live-action version of Winnie the Pooh called Christopher Robin. It follows a grown-up Christopher Robin who's left the toys behind, he's left the 100 Acre Wood, he's got a job in London in a suitcase factory. Just as A.A. Milne probably imagined Christopher Robin would go up and do. And the toys are feeling a bit left out. Christopher Robin's life changes when Winnie the Pooh shows up in the little garden outside his London house. Now, I saw this film with Sarah. I must admit, I had quite low expectations going into this. Winnie the Pooh is that interesting one where Disney, I see it in all the Disney parks, Disney sell loads of toys, they do loads of cartoons, they do loads of video games with Winnie the Pooh in. The films have never really been that big. Like, it's an iconic character, which I think helps, but there's never really been a big Winnie the Pooh movie. The Winnie the Pooh movies are always, like, second-tier Disney. And I thought the same might be true of this. It might be like a sub-Paddington. But you know what? I really enjoyed it.
I made so many inhumane sounds and squeaks because the animation on Winnie the Pooh is, and his voice, it's the original voice, Jim Cummings, the squeaking I made because they make him look like an old raggedy teddy bear. And I grew up with Winnie the Pooh. My mum loves him. So I grew up with a 90s cartoon with the best theme song.
Oh, that's good. Winnie the Pooh and Friends.
Winnie the Pooh and Friends was great. This film just really brings back what makes Pooh so great. And Eeyore and Tigger, Eeyore being the MVP, the funniest character in this whole film, has this kind of spark of childhood and nostalgia. That all fits to me. It really works.
This is one of those live action films with real human actors and then CGI characters, and I thought the CGI was second to none. Like, it's probably the best CGI I've ever seen.
Oh, good. Because these are the things that are putting me off, to be honest. And I kind of share the same sentiment as you, is that Winnie the Pooh is such a staple of my childhood, and I would be very upset if it was to be ripped apart and put in a way that didn't fit my idea of the romantic side that I still have of Pooh.
Disney lately quite famously have been adapting their cartoons into live action films. We had Beauty and the Beast, we've got Lion King and Aladdin coming up. This was sort of like somewhere in between, because it isn't like a straightforward adaptation of their animated Winnie the Pooh. And in fact, in this, they move the goalposts a bit, because it's sort of somewhere in between, I think, the cartoons that you might remember and the books, obviously, which it's based on. And it's this new thing, which I quite liked.
Ewan McGregor's great. Ewan McGregor just has to smile, and I'm completely sold on his performance, because he's got such a twinkly... expressional face. Expressional face? I don't think that's a word. But Ewan McGregor,
I think it's a good
applies.
Quality for an actor, though, to have an expressional face.
Expressional face. I think it applies to Ewan McGregor. And here, he has to do so much with so little, because obviously he's not working with other actors. He's just working solely with a teddy bear collection that doesn't exist because it's all CGI. And he does. He just makes you believe that he is this kind of worn out Christopher Robin, who has London and work, and abandoning his family for work has really worn him down, and he just needs the help of this really sweet, naive, innocent, cuddly bear to bring back what's so lovely about fun and adventures and being with your family. And I think Ewan McGregor does the whole arc of Christopher Robin really well.
Yeah, I agree. I think Ewan McGregor, I think his heart is really in this, and he gives a very sincere performance when knowing that he's probably acting opposite golf balls on sticks.
Yeah.
I did actually read an interview with some of the crew on this film, and they had like a stand-in teddy bear for the actors to act opposite. So just imagine in the scenes in the film, like Ewan McGregor really going for it opposite just an actual teddy bear. And then they had a headless version because they have to animate the mouth on the bear. So at some points, the actors just had a headless version of the doll to work with, which sounds very bleak.
Yeah, I think I would have to muster up some kind of serious imagination in order to play that role the way that it sounds like he does. Is there a vague underscore story here of never grow up? Because it sounds like man boy,
yeah,
like, harking back to his childhood, trying to still retain the magic of and wonder of being a young boy again.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I think the film it's most like is Hook,
right?
Which is about obviously growing up Peter Pan,
yeah,
going back to Neverland and rediscovering his roots.
Yeah.
And I do think there is generally the same line in it where both Christopher Robin and Peter Pan's wife goes, "You're not living life. You're missing out." Because you're ignoring your kids, you're just too busy with work. And they're quite similar spiritual animals, really. And it is about not never growing up, but balance and how work shouldn't take over. Although I get a bit, there's my own criticism here, is that Chris Robin literally has to save the job of like a million people. So when people are like, stop working, it's like, he kind of has to at this point. Yeah. Like, I get that he needs to balance, but you've got to save a whole factory full of people as well.
Yeah, for a kids' film, the side story of a department facing redundancy in a suitcase factory is kind of weird. Mark Gatiss plays his boss, which is quite fun in the film. Like, there's some really good human actors in the film, and there's some nice cameos if you like British comedy from the likes of Mackenzie Crook, Matt Berry, Simon Farnaby, who wrote the Paddington films, which is kind of a nice sort of coincidence. Yeah. So it's got lots of faces you might recognise, and you'll know the toys, you'll know the voices. The voices which are new voices coming in, they've got actors like Peter Capaldi. Is it Toby Jones?
Toby Jones.
And like, so it's like voices you'll recognise. What really surprised me is just how the film is very grey. And it is like, it is this joyous family film, but it is this background of grey, and lots of people are dealing with feeling left out and a little bit of depression and anxiety. So it's an odd tone, but I think ultimately it's very good for the family, and especially maybe for people who grew up with Winnie the Pooh and they'll sort of know the journey and the legacy of these characters, because there's lots of references to Winnie the Pooh getting stuck in a log and poo sticks and stuff. So there's lots of references to classic stories, which I quite liked. Like, it's sort of knowing without turning and winking to the camera.
And there's a wonderful sequence with a red balloon.
Oh, the red balloon is a metaphor for joy.
Yeah. You have to have a red balloon.
That was deep. So I think that's a recommendation for Christopher Robin.
Okay, sold.
It's like an unconventional live-action sort of Disney adaptation, but worth taking a punt on. Interesting director as well. They've gone with the director of The Kite Runner and Quantum of Solace to make this beloved family film. Shall we talk about the new Spike Lee joint, Black Klansman?
Black Klansman, incredibly different, obviously, from Christopher Robin, but we are... Oh, this film is incredible. It really is incredible. I saw it first in Cannes, and I saw it again recently, and it's rage-inducing. It's powerful. It's saying so much, and it's so much more than the baseline narrative, which is in itself an incredible, incredible story that is hard to believe. You have a black policeman going undercover as a white policeman in order to infiltrate the KKK. You couldn't even make that stuff up. And we have Spike Lee going back to his roots and the stuff that you love and know him for. You've got the dolly shot. You've got the wake up all throughout, punctuated throughout the whole movie. You have wonderful black America looking beautiful and just being wonderful to one another. And there's so infrequent times when you get that. But at the same time, obviously, we are having a very heavy hand into the state of American politics right now. There's lots of winks to what's going on, what with Trump. There's a massive wake-up call as to looking at what's going on in Charlottesville right now, which is, you know, happened a year ago this very week. And that's the stuff that really hits you. That's the stuff that roots you to your seat and makes you think, whoa, okay, this is real. We're sitting in a cinema looking at the cinematic representation of what you could only make up, but actually this is real. And yeah, it's incredibly moving. And yeah, God bless Spike Lee for it.
I think they made this film reasonably quickly, which is maybe why it feels very relevant yeah. and quite urgent, because yeah. I think Spike Lee felt it was an urgent story to tell, even though it's actually based on a 70s true life event.
Yeah.
And the film is set in a period setting. You're yeah. right, it does feel very relevant for today. And it's kind of a nice way to sort of veil the metaphor.
Yeah.
You know, like this stuff hasn't gone away. It's been in America for definitely the last 30 years.
Yeah.
Obviously
yeah.
longer. Yeah. But in the context of this film.
Absolutely.
I think they did everything they could to sort of fast track this film out and, yeah. and to turn it around.
And when you think of it like that, it's an incredible accomplishment because it's really managed to snapshot 70s America. It's beautiful, the lighting, the costumes, the outfits, the feel and the fear and the anxiety and the politics. It's also about representation, big time, about representations of black people in America. And you've got all these great ways of him honing into that history. So you've got conversations about blaxploitation films, you've got mentions to Harry Belafonte, who's one of the biggest Hollywood stars of the black community. Hattie McDaniels is mentioned. All these little mentions of things that remind us how media and cinema have a lot of responsibility into the portrayal of people and how much we carve our ideas of what people are and are about through cinema. He's reminding us, in, if you like, of the power of cinema, and I think it's an incredible vehicle for that.
Fantastic. People loved this film in Cannes. The critics loved it. Sarah, you probably saw the response on social media after the screening. And I mean, Spike Lee actually went on to win the Grand Jury Prize at the end when they did the awards in Cannes. So like, it's been recognised. Are you excited for this film?
It's top of my list.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely top of my list. When I saw the festival trailer, I was like, this is going to be an amazing film. And one of my friends would see it and she hasn't stopped talking about how the impact she has on it and the conversation that it's striking up is really, really important. So it is absolutely top of my list to watch.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it again. I saw it at one time earlier this year. I'm really pleased as well. Sometimes when you see films in Cannes, you have to wait, you know, months and years to actually see them. They might hold them back for the Oscars. And I like that this film is coming out in August. People can see it not too long after all of that fuss that was in Cannes.
It's incredibly strategic as well. I mean, he's married it up to August the 17th. The Charlottesville riots and what was going on last year to make you realise. So I think it's incredibly strategic in that way.
We should mention some of the cast because Spike Lee does get amazing performances from his actors. He always has done. In this film, we've got Adam Driver, we've got John David Washington. He's remarkable.
He's so good. He's super cool. He plays it so well. Denzel Washington's son. So, of course, it's in the genes that this guy's going to be cool.
What's quite funny with John David Washington being in this film when it's released in the UK is that he's actually going up against his dad's film, Equalizer 2, or the sequel.
I'd like to be around the dinner table for that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be head-to-head at the box office. Family dinner could be a little bit awkward.
I'm sure it's a proud moment. It'll be great.
We also got Topher Grace doing quite a thankless role in this. He's so good, though, as the head of the KKK and one of the people that they have these phone conversations with when Adam Driver and John David Washington are having to play the same fictional sort of character that they end up playing in this undercover sting. But yeah, I loved it. Loved the soundtrack.
Soundtrack's great. Unreleased Prince song.
Yeah, I mean, remarkable.
Only Spike Lee can get an unreleased Prince song on his new film. Come on, that's power.
Absolutely. This film is out on the 24th of August. Highly, highly recommend seeking it out. Lots of people have been saying it's like a Spike Lee return to form. Mm. I don't know if he's ever really been off form. It's just probably his most high-profile film for a little while.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, the last film was Chirac, and that didn't really get the cinematic release it probably could have done. I loved it. But this one feels like it's getting a lot more weight behind it. And partly because of the relevancy, it seems like a right time to be watching this kind of film right now.
Yeah, and if you put the dude from Star Wars in your movie,
I know.
You'll probably get a bigger release.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of that commercial element there too.
I did love Adam Driver in it as well. He's great. I mean, I love him in everything. So.
And it's got a story credit from Jordan Peele, who did Get Out, which is quite interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think he's got a screenwriting credit, but it feels like at one point Spike and Jordan had a chat. Yeah. And it became this film.
Well Jordan so Peele actually, yeah, he actually came up to Spike Lee and told him about it. And he was like, oh, I didn't even know about this story, like this, the real story of the cop going undercover. And yeah, from there, Black Klansman arrived.
And we're celebrating the release of this film with a re-release of Do the Right Thing on the 3rd of September. So if you see Spike Lee's latest and you want to see one of his earliest, check that out in early September, just after you can have a chance to see both films on the big screen, which will be great. Moving on now to the very end of August, because August is running out. Summer is leaving us. We've got two films out on the same day, so we're going to ask you to pick your favourites later on. But let's do Yardi first of all, which is directed by Idris Elba. He's not in front of the camera on this one. He's purely behind the camera. It's a story which he's really passionate about, and it's been his sort of passion project. He's taken it to Sundance. We played it at Pitch House Central at Sundance London. I have to admit, I haven't seen this film yet, guys, but I know both of you have. Karina, could you tell us a little bit about what the film's about?
It's based on a book which was certainly knocking around in my childhood called Yardi, and it's taken 10 years for Idris Elba to make it onto the big screen. And ultimately it is a British gangster movie, which I think a lot of people aren't realising, because it's portraying Britain in a time when you did have a lot of... There was certainly a gangster scene, and the name Yardi is the name of somebody who is a little bit troublesome. We start off in Jamaica in the 70s, and there's a big party, and this isn't a spoiler, by the way, this is literally in the first couple of minutes and sets up the story. But starts off with a big yard party, and it's all about promoting peace and love. Trouble ensues, there's a gun shootout, and it's all very cinematic, and our lead, Dee, his brother is shot. The rest of the movie, we are basically taking down a revenge story, thriller.
The gangster genre is tried and tested, but actually to see Britain in this period, from this point of view, that sounds totally unique.
The best thing about Yardi is that it helps nuance the conversations about British gangster films, and they very rarely actually make it onto the big screen at this level. A lot of them tend to go straight to VOD, and that's fine, but it's nice to see something like this up on the big screen, because it is actually very, very cinematic. What Yardi falls down on, it actually picks up on cinematic value. It's beautiful. Jamaica looks wonderful. It's the Jamaica that I certainly recognise from going over there, and it's a 80s London that I recognise from growing up in Hackney. So it really manages to nail that sense of place. And the set scenes are gorgeous, and you've got all the details in the backdrops and all the outfits. So for that, it's good.
And we had Idris Elba at Sundance London at Pitch House Central, and he came with the whole cast, which was amazing, because obviously they all live in London, and it's a lot of newcomers as well as some people who you might have seen sort of around before. And that was amazing, that premiere night.
Kind of remember the closing party with Emile Meane dancing
non-stop. He was excellent.
So he plays D in the film.
He is, and he's excellent. He's very, very good. I don't know if he's been in any films.
He's from The Maze Runner. He's been in a couple of films. I think his big one. He's got a large fan base from the Maze Runner.
But this is his first like major lead, isn't it? Yeah. And I think he really does nail it. Between him and the female character that he's playing alongside, Chantal Jackson, who I think is actually the best thing in this. She's wonderful. She just emotes so much emotion, and she's beautiful, and she just looks and plays that role of the forthright and quietly confident and powerful woman alongside what essentially is her wasteman boyfriend.
Yeah, she is a really strong character in this. She's really wonderful to watch. And he is really good. He gets the nuances of this character and what he goes through from like this really angered and bittered young man on a journey of not just revenge, but kind of finding who he is in a place in the world without his brother. And his brother, I mean, the character of his brother is so good as a character who just wanted to unite gangs and bring like peace to his little town in Jamaica. And to see that kind of journey from his brother's death to where he ends up is really good. It's a really good film. I enjoyed it. I love his visual style, Idris Elba, and what he captures.
This is it. I think the visual style is gorgeous, and it is a wonderful place to be for however long the movie is. I do think that this does smack of first-time director pitfalls, in that he's kind of doing a bit of box ticking along what gangster movies should be. So you've got the tropes of the dropping to the knees and screaming to the sky because no! And it's like, we don't have to have that. But you know, I think there's a lot of love for Idris Elba, and a lot of people will come out to support him, and they will have a good time with it. It's an enjoyable movie.
I'd be quite interested to see what Elba does next. Because I always find that first-time directors from actors always go what they know. So they always go to, like Angelina Jolie goes to the dramas, and like he's clearly gone for like the action gangster storyline, and that was where his pitfalls come from, because he's trying too hard to imitate the stuff he knows. So it'd be interesting to see, because I think he's got promise. He's got so much promise, and he lays so much good foundations to be a director, to see what he picks up next and what he does. And
can't wait for the Idris Elba rom-com.
Idris Elba rom-com.
What could he do? Maybe it's with a script from Nancy Myers.
Yeah.
And he gets a Melamine back in for this. Like, let's do it. Maybe it's a musical rom-com.
Again, that's one of the best things about Yardia, in fact. This slow-burning, brooding romance between Dee and Chantelle Jackson. They're having this long distance relationship, and they've always got that spark and just the little glimpses in their eye, and there's a real magic and chemistry there.
Well, that's kickstarted.
I'll have a word.
Yeah, rom-com.
What's number?
So Yardie is released at the end of August, but there's a special event which is actually taking place at Pitch House Central on the 23rd, which is Idris coming in. He's doing a Q&A, and there's gonna be live music, and it's sort of like a London gala screening before the film goes on general
release. That's the way to see it, people. See it with a big audience. Don't sit and wait for it for DVD. This is a great movie to watch with a bunch of people that are going to appreciate it and whoop and cheer, and because the music is so good. And yeah, so, sorry, really bigging up that event.
That's great. I mean, it's going to be satellite broadcast around the country, so you can see it wherever you're based. But it's nice that it's actually happening in Screen One at Pitch House Central, where the magic happens.
Yes.
Finally, something completely different, Cold War. It's the new film from Pavel Pavlikovsky. It's very short. That's my main takeaway from this film. It's only 85 minutes long. It's in this like beautiful like Academy aspect ratio, and it's in black and white. I love all of that stuff. That stuff's like film crack for me. So I made a beeline to see this, and it's safe to say I loved it. It's this beautiful like sweeping romance set just after the war and in the ensuing decades, and it's this romance that sort of follows this will they won't they couple through several decades of their life and various things. He goes to prison at one point, she ends up touring around Paris, and like they keep meeting up at these different points in their lives, and they get families and stuff, and I think it's really beautiful. It's like watching all of the Before trilogy, the Richard Linklater Before trilogy, in one go, but in 85 minutes.
I'm so sold.
So it's just very efficient, really, if nothing else. Yeah. Did you see this also, Sarah?
I just watched it last night.
Oh, wow.
Actually, I've just come from watching it, and I completely agree. Like some of the shots in it are so amazing, and he has this really good eye for the cycles and repeating shots to represent where they are in their journey. The acting is phenomenal. I still don't know how I feel emotionally to it. I do think I'm not too sure how I'm meant to feel, whether I'm meant to be swept up in an amazing love story or I'm meant to be sad, because it's quite sad. Like, there, you know, it's from the war. Mm. Like you said, he goes to prison and there's a lot of things keeping them apart. But I think that's somewhat kind of beautiful, that I can't quite feel whether I'm supposed to be like in love with this or sad about it. And I feel like they're two characters who are those pinballs, like magnetic pinballs, that they're never quite meeting. Like, they're never going to be in an epic romance that they're going to die happy together and go old. And they're just clacking and clashing, and there's always something keeping them apart, which I think is quite lovely. And I'm always happy when a film is 85 minutes long nowadays, because it's very rare. And I think it is a story that needs that kind of shortness. And oh my God, I've just convinced myself that I've loved it. So in that moment, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I think it's really well crafted, and I think the runtime is important to talk about. Not always the case, but I think actually what he's done is he's actually shaved off all of the unnecessary bits in this film. I think this film is a labour of love. I think I've been reading a press thing about it. He's been working on it for years and years and years, and it started as an epic, and as he got more into production and shooting it, it just got shorter and shorter and shorter and tighter and tighter and tighter. And there's not like an ounce of fat on this film. It's like everything is there for storytelling, and I really admire that, because when you come out of the film, you don't go, that was really short. You go, oh, that was a really traumatic, romance. Oh, if only they got it together. And you do that because you believe it. And then you look at your watch and you go, oh, he made me feel that in, you know, like, just longer than an episode of Game of Thrones. Okay, wow. So I think it really shows that he is a craftsman in terms of his directing and also in the edit suite as well, to get it down to this really efficient runtime. I think the leads are so good, the two main leads, because as well as having to do the acting and sell the romance, they also actually are musical performers in the film. And there's lots of like live music, piano playing, singing. So they're very, very talented to be able to do this. And what I also liked about the romance is they're not always right for each other. They're really great when they're together, but it's a bit destructive. And when they're together for a long period of time, they grow apart because they're ultimately two different people and they're not meant to be together. But the film is sort of showing you what could be if only they could work out. So you're frustrated. Mm. You're like, come on, guys, just talk.
Mm. Oh, it sounds so up my street. Mm. Just the complexities of a romance and long-term relationships. I think that's always so mystical and magical and weird to me. And so to see it on cinematic representations is my bag. I did think it was going to be a very pretentious perfume advert type film, but from the reviews, beautifully cut trailer, I'm sold, can't wait.
Are you thinking that because it's black and white and it's set in 1960s Paris?
Yeah.
In jazz bars?
And it's called Cold War, and I was like, what does
great
that even
name
mean?
For a perfume.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's done a very good job, and of course, from talking to you guys about what it's actually about, I'm really can't wait.
It's a funny one when we've just talked about things like Mission Impossible, like to see on the big screen. But you should see this one on the big screen because actually it's the small detail, which is the blockbuster element. The detail on their faces. They've cast actors with these really amazing faces. In black and white, you know, it shows all the detail and the lines and their expressions. And all the production design is all built around looking great in black and white. So there's lots of like tuxedos, evening gowns, you know, like very well-lit, moody jazz bars. So it is sort of like blockbuster art house cinema. And you'll have an absolute blast.
It has some of the most beautiful shots you have to see on the big screen. And there's a mirror shot. I love reflection shots in cinema, and there's one mirror shot that I'm obsessed with. It's just really cinematic.
Tom Cruise is jumping out of planes, but all you need to please Sarah is a mirror.
You just need a good mirror shot. It just makes me so happy. But funny enough, the reflections in the helicopter scene in Mission Impossible Fallout really get me going because it's so beautiful and so like action-packed, but the reflections of the mountains on the helicopter.
Wow, I feel like you might be the only person that has noticed this, but this is great.
This is why I live for mirror shots. I have many, many like happy times, and if you can get a really perfect reflection shot.
I feel like a special podcast episode might
be
coming. Maybe at the end of the year we'll do your top five. So I'm going to have to ask you both to make a difficult choice now. We've just talked about four movies. Which one would you recommend if you could only choose one movie for the audience to go and watch after listening to this podcast? Which one would you say, go and see this right now? This is the important film you have to watch.
Black Klansman. See it three times.
Three times?
Yeah, see it as many times as you can because you'll see it once for the narrative and you'll get swept away, and then you'll see it again for the actual politics and the rage-inducing injustice of it all. And then see it again to hark back to your love of 70s cinema and then 80s cinema and tracing the dots between Birth of a Nation up to blaxploitation films. It's so good.
Sarah, what would you recommend the audience watch?
Cold War. Just for the mirror scene alone. No, Cold War. It's perfectly acted. Its cinematography and its look is gorgeous. And also, like, it's got a backdrop of Cold War politics. So there's features of Stalin and concentration camps, and it's on Poland. So it's all the after effect of what happened to Poland throughout the war. And it's got some beautiful music in it. And it is just dreamlike.
I'm going to recommend Christopher Robin because neither of you did. And it's got one of my favourite British comedians in, a guy called Nick Mohammed, voices Piglet. I don't know how he got that job. Like, it's bananas that he's in this movie. But go and see it for Nick Mohammed playing Piglet. A treat. Okay, Sarah, you've been doing some really amazing interviews. You've actually got an interview with the director of Christopher Robin.
I have indeed.
Up online, we've got Ant-Man and the Wasp with Peyton Reed. And Karina, you spoke to the director of Heathers and one of the stars, one of the Heathers.
I know, a real life Heather. It's great.
Which is very cool. And Heathers is on a national re-release at the moment.
It is.
We just played at Picture House in our Culture Shock strand. And definitely, I think there's a big Blu-ray, 4K Blu-ray thing coming out later
it's
in the year.
It's beautiful. It looks great.
So check that out. And you're about to talk to Spike Lee.
I know.
So we'll ask you about how that goes in a future episode. But yeah, look out for the Spike Lee pod. And I think after your very impassioned recommendation, that should be quite an interesting interview.
I'm just going to sit there and gawp at him for the 25 minutes that I've got.
That would be terrible audio, but fun for you.
Yeah, maybe not.
Okay, and now we're doing a new thing, listeners, because it's the end of the show. We've done some good work, guys. Let's celebrate. I've prepared a quiz. Doing a quiz at the end of our shows to wrap it up. A little bit of fun. This is the pudding to our meat and vegetables chat. I've got three questions for you both. There is no prize other than the satisfaction of winning the quiz. Now to play the quiz, right, you need to say your name. That's your buzzer. And whoever, you know, gets it right is the winner of the point. And then you win nothing. So are we ready for question number one in the quiz? They're all sort of related to films we talked about, so you guys should fly through this. You've got no excuses for doing badly. So Christopher Robin is in cinemas now, as we mentioned. What was the year the first Disney animated Winnie the Pooh film came to cinemas? You
Sarah.
Both talked about being fans. You've got no excuse for not knowing. Sarah, you buzzed in.
1962.
That is incorrect.
1965.
Also incorrect, but you're closer by proxy, so you get half a point. It was actually in 1977.
I totally knew that.
Yeah. it's a bit of a cheat film. It was. It's made up of lots of shorts they made for Winnie the Pooh, and they put them all together with a newly filmed intro and outro with a live-action book opening and closing, just as a way to get their short films in cinemas. It's called The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, but what it should really be called is The Many Cartoons of Winnie the Pooh We've Made and Haven't Put in Cinemas Yet and Have Repackaged.
Deal with it.
Winnie the Pooh's a funny one. He's not really had like a proper Disney feature. He had quite a small film a couple of years ago, I think 2011, where Zooey Deschanel did the soundtrack for it. So it's this quite like twee indie soundtrack, and it was this new Disney animated film that kind of went out under the radar. I don't know if you remember it, Sarah.
They've got the Tigger movie and then the
Piglet movie. Yes, so lots of spin-offs. But actual proper Winnie the Pooh seems to be strangely absent from cinema. Odd.
Where's Eeyore's film? That's what I want.
I feel like there might be an Eeyore film.
Yeah,
I feel like there should be one because he is the funniest character.
He's more representative of the average mood.
Maybe it's coming. I mean, he steals the show in this film, so maybe this is the prequel for that. So we talked about Yardi and Idris Elba, the legend that is Idris. Idris, before he was a film director, is an actor. You might know him from things like Luther and all that sort of stuff. He's in the Marvel films as well. Most actors British actors start their careers on TV. So I've got a list of jobs here that Idris has done on British TV. Some are true and some are false. So, did Idris Elba play a market trader in Only Fools and Horses, the BBC sitcom Only Fools and Horses?
Karina. False.
You're correct, that is false.
Yeah, I feel like I would have known that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Interesting, okay. So you feel like you know his early CV?
Maybe.
Okay, well, let's see if you get this one. Did Idris Elba play a parachute instructor in 2.4 Children, the BBC sitcom 2.4 Children?
Sarah. I'm going to go for true.
That is correct. That's actually his first credit on IMDb, playing a parachute instructor in BBC sitcom 2.4 Children.
That was so random.
What a throwback.
Yeah, that is a throwback.
Okay, lots of actors go through things like The Bill, and the other one is Casualty. Did Idris Elba play a trauma doctor in Casualty?
Karina, false.
Why do you think false?
I don't know, I still just think I would have known this.
But you didn't know about the parachute instructor?
No, I didn't. But that seems a little bit more obscure. 2.4 Children isn't the usual thing that you talk about, but with Casualty, The Bill, Grange Hill, that's all the... I don't know. Is this the point where you told me I'm wrong?
You are correct, actually. It is false.
See? I knew it.
He could play a trauma doctor if he wanted to, but he opted for
he
parachute
could.
Instructor.
Yeah.
He likes doing that.
He can do whatever he wants. He's Idris Elba.
Okay, final question. Did Idris Elba play a sex worker in Absolutely Fabulous?
Sarah, I hope it's true.
Yeah, I couldn't even get my words out. I was like, where is this episode?
It is true. He played a character called Hilton, a male escort who the women book for a night in.
That is exactly what I am about to go and do right now. Not book Idris Elba for my night in, but go find that episode ASAP.
I think me and Corinne need to stop the quiz and go find that episode right away.
Sorry, bye.
Well, very good. Let's end the quiz there. That feels like we can't really beat that. I think Karina won because you just smashed the falses on Idris.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sarah, you've won nothing. Karina, you've also won nothing. But we had fun, right?
I win glory, damn it.
We won the knowledge that there's an episode of Idris Elba.
That is
in Absolutely Fabulous. That is.
Ooh. Yeah.
And on that note, I think we should end this podcast because I don't think we'll top that. Thank you, Karina and Sarah, for talking to us on this episode. Thank you also for doing all the interviews you've been doing. We'll put those in the feed on the pod so you can find those. Big thank you to Luke Smith for editing the show. He cuts out all of our waffle and makes us sound great. And a huge thank you to the good people at Silk Factory for supporting the podcast. Please go and check them out for all your creative needs at thesilkfactory.co. Thank you for listening, and please do rate, review, subscribe on your podcatcher of choice. Tell your friends, say nice things about it, and go and see the movies we talked about, especially Cold War and Black Klansman. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thanks.